Today's broadcast is the second in a series introducing congressional candidates from Maine's 1st District vying for their party's favor in the upcoming June primaries. Our guest this morning in an open telephone and in-studio discussion, actor Gary Merrill. Good morning. My name is Norman Gallant for your friends and neighbors at the Edwards Division of the Bates Manufacturing Company. In today's program, we're about to enter a dialogue with Republican candidate Gary Merrill for the office of congressman from Maine's 1st District concerning his campaign, the issues which he views of uppermost importance for the nation and for the state of Maine. Listeners with questions are able to call in during the program by dialing the talkback number at 623-3878. That number is 623-3878. Actor Gary Merrill, although frequently engaged in film work on the West Coast and in Broadway involvements on the New York scene, always seems to return to the state of Maine, where much of his early life was spent during the summers, and where in later years he maintained permanent residence, and where he now lives in Falmouth Forsyth, a suburb of Portland. His announcement earlier this year to run on the Republican ticket for the post of congressman from Maine's 1st District was on the basis of an anti-war candidate. This morning's interview with Mr. Merrill is the result of an invitation which was extended to all candidates running for this office. For our listeners, may I again remind you that the telephone calls are welcomed in the program this morning and that you may contact the show by dialing 623-3878, 623-3878. Well, Gary Merrill, since your announced candidacy, there have been some fast-flying developments, especially in the matter of the Vietnam War and the current negotiations in Paris to get the conflict resolved. This is one of the things which you were striving for, and I'm wondering now that part of this has been accomplished, exactly what is your outlook as to what is happening and what you, if you were in a position, would do at this stage of the game?
Well, at that point, I said my priorities were, one, to get rid of Johnson, and two, to get rid of the war, and three, to straighten out this sort of sick society. Well, Mr. Johnson took care of the first two himself. He removed himself and started toward peace. I think this still is the priority, is to get rid of the war, because Mr. Schweitzer at the International Monetary Fund said if we escalated much more, we would bring down our economy and the rest of the world. So I think it was probably the dollar crisis that made Mr. Johnson have another thought. So that is still a priority, and then we've got to get rid of our pollution in this country and the poverty. Poverty is probably second. You can't really do anything about the poverty in the cities until you stop that war and get that $30 billion organized.
You know, we talk about poverty, the ghetto situation. Last week, I believe it was, or the week before, when one of the candidates also running for the post that you're running for, we asked concerning the poverty situation in the state of Maine. We talk about ghettos in the large cities, but do you see that we have the same type of situation that can be paralleled right here in the state of Maine?
Well, we have 50,000 people, I think, in poverty in the state of Maine. Rural poverty has a tendency to disappear because you don't go out into the country and see it. It's easier to see in the cities. It's also should be easier to deal with in the cities because you have industries and things that supposedly makes it easier to place people. So the rural poverty problem is even harder to take care of. Of course, I think the emergency thing, it's not a cure, it's a Band-Aid again, but the basic fast cure or fast beginning is to get into the Department of Agriculture and get some of that wheat that we spend millions of dollars storing every year and open up some of those silos and let's feed a few of the children at least. Just start feeding them, and then gradually you've got to go those programs, our welfare programs are pretty archaic. They've got to be reappraised and redone. Imagination is very necessary. They spend money, and money's not just the answer. You've got to use it imaginatively.
Mm-hmm.
You make a picture that costs $10 million and there's no imagination, it's a failure, like mm-hmm. some of these programs are.
We have to provide inspiration for some of these people to want to get out of the situations that they're in?
That's right. And where it has worked across the country, it's where, luckily, there were some people involved with imagination and helped them help themselves.
Mm-hmm. We've got a telephone call. I'm signaled here, so we're going to push in the button and let you say hello to the person on the line. Here we go.
Good morning. This is Gary Merrill.
Good morning, Merrill. Mr. Merrill?
Yeah.
May I ask you a question or two?
What do you mean?
What's the difference between a Democrat and a Republican?
The difference between a Democrat and a Republican?
Yeah.
I really don't know. As far as I'm concerned, running for office, I'm an American and I'm for people.
Yes.
And I should think that anybody, whether they're a Republican or Democrat, that's what they are.
Well, I heard your television talk last week and you spoke about the word imagination. You stressed it more or less.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed your speech. I wish it could have lasted a half hour or more.
Well, thank you.
But, you know, the old timers, I'm in my late 50s, and the old timers, I can remember Depression.
Yeah.
And we blamed all the hard times on Hoover, which was wrong.
That's right.
And it's been coming up for a generation, so to speak, that thing had.
Yeah.
So when Roosevelt got in, I was cutting cordwood for 85 cents a cord in the summertime. That's small money.
Yeah.
And every time we'd drive the wedge with the sledge, we'd say Hoover. Hoover. So when I was old enough to vote, I voted for President Roosevelt, the late President Roosevelt.
Right.
And I think that's what brought up the Democratic Party, made it so strong.
Yes, I think it did.
And everyone, to be popular, had to be a Democrat.
Right.
And, of course, they brought the liquor in.
Yeah.
And Dunaway was late 20s, so to speak, the flapper age. And
yeah.
There was no great change in the country until 1938 or 39, possibly 39.
Right.
It did start a little bit in 38. It takes time to build a bonfire, you know that.
That is right.
And, well, I won't keep your time any longer because I want to hear you talk some more.
Oh, thank you.
I'm sure the public is very interested in it. And Mr. Glenn has the best radio program in the East, by none.
Well, I'm sure he'll thank you for that, too.
We like that kind of endorsement, huh? Our telephone number here, 623-3878. Any of you who wish to join us in conversation, Mr. Gary Merrill is our guest of the morning. Gary, I'm told that your presentation at the Republican State Convention in Bangor was considered to be a notable part of the program, and in fact it came as a little surprise to some of the people who were there, especially one reporter from the New York Times who was covering the event. I am wondering exactly what the reaction probably occurred after that from the party members.
Well, I still haven't heard anything from the party members. As a matter of fact, I'm kind of surprised that some one or two prominent Republicans might have said publicly that it's interesting to have Mr. Merrill in the campaign, and it certainly stimulates the Republican Party and stimulates politics in general, and the fact that Mr. Merrill is a national figure certainly will get Maine some publicity. I thought that some prominent Republican might have said something like that, but they didn't. I think at the convention, from what the newspaper men told me and friends of mine, that I did make an impression, so I guess there quietly something happened, but not publicly.
One of the comments was that you could hear a pin drop because while your talk was on, everybody paid close attention to what was being said.
Well, I suppose part of it was curiosity, and they said, you know, well, let's see what this guy has to say. So at least they gave me that, that they listened to what I had to say, and I hope that they were impressed by what I had to say.
Concerning your campaign and the operations of it, exactly to date, what have you been doing? I know that I hear of your traveling hither and yon. Maybe you can outline to us exactly what's been taking place.
Well, as I say, I've been scrambling. I think I've done about 5 or 6,000 miles so far, probably be nearer 8 by the time I'm through. I just go anywhere there are more than 2 people gathered. I go to Rotary Clubs or Lions Clubs and Kiwanis and... And, of course, we go to the candidates' nights in the various towns and the Republican committees. And I just keep going. I'd like to talk to everybody personally in the whole district. So I'm doing as much as I can. And the rest of it I have to do on television because I think the personal thing is the best. I think people like to sort of, as I say, get to feel you and smell you a little. It's a step above television. Television is fairly good, but the personal thing is important.
This contact, this byplay with people.
You sit around a room or a small group of people and you have a good discussion, and I think that's the best way.
Yeah. Let me remind our listeners again that the telephone number here is 623-3878 and that Gary Merrill is our guest this morning. If you have any questions or comments, just give us a call at 623-3878. Concerning the formal structure of your campaign, you talk about television. You have some newspaper exposure. No billboards?
No, well, I've always been against signboards. I wish that we would take a page from Vermont's book and get our signboards down and make Maine really the most beautiful. It's the most beautiful state physically, I think, now, but if you got the signboards down, it would complete it. So, in all honesty, I just said, well, I'm not going to have my face in front of a pine tree.
Mm-hmm. You're going to let the nature take care of the beauty, huh?
That's right. Maybe the lack of my face up there will impress them more than just the face itself.
I wanted to get into an area concerning the personalities such as yourself and the acting profession who are getting into the business of politics. It seems that more and more of this is happening. And is this, on your part, an extension perhaps of the actor, or is it something in which you sincerely, as well as the other candidates, feel that they've got a duty or something that has to be performed here and that they're trying to perform a service?
I don't know about the others. I think both Mr. Reagan and Mr. Murphy were talked into it by the party in California. I don't think that they really had a tremendous belief or something. I think a lot of men said, why don't you run George, or why don't you run Ronnie? I've thought about politics a long time, and as I've gotten more disenchanted with the way things go on in Washington, I have bored my friends with my complaints, and I finally decided to, as they say, put my money where my mouth was and take a chance and try to get down there myself where I could talk and complain down there. I have a loud voice, and I'd like to use it in Washington. So mine has been out of myself. Nobody came to me and said, why don't you run? I just decided I was going
on
my own.
Right. How about the matter of campaigning as such? Is this of course, it's coming out of your pocket. Do you feel that this is a big factor that is a kind of a hindrance to the average person to get into the political field?
Well, I think it's much easier if you have money and your family has money that you can use, like the Kennedys particularly. I've always worked for my living, and I've had hungry periods, and so I know how it costs, but I believe in something this much that I've taken some of mine. I've had a little help from friends who've contributed some, but it makes it easier if you have the money, because then you can have more of the machinery and set things up and so forth and mm-hmm. so on.
Do the organized campaign that is necessary to implement your candidacy.
In other words, I need about five or six more arms.
Yeah. We've got some telephone calls, so let's jump into a line. Here we go.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Merrill. I'm particularly interested in education in the state of Maine. I'm on the school board in our town and so forth, and I am curious to know what you think is going to be some sort of relief for these small towns in education. Something's got to happen. What do you think is the answer?
Well, I think the SAD is a step toward it. I know that a lot of towns don't like it. But it seems to me, I'm not thoroughly conversant with it, but it seems to me that is one way of doing it. Of course, I'm also very definite about the school. You know, as you know, I'm interested in education because I go around to the schools and read poetry. I would rather, for instance, this is the way I express it, I would rather have my children go to school in a tent with four good teachers than a beautiful school building with four bad teachers.
Right.
I think that they must concentrate on paying teachers and getting good teachers, and then worry about the buildings.
But I think don't you feel that there needs to be more help from the state to help these small towns financially? We've seen in the town meetings this year how every town, practically without exception, has such trouble raising enough money to support their schools, teachers' salaries, too.
The state, of course, the state has to help, and so does the federal government, has got to spend more money on education.
Well, that's what I wondered, how you felt about that. Whether you felt they were doing their share, or if there was...
No, I think they're doing some, but I don't think they're doing enough. I think, because this, to me, is one of the most important things. Of course, if everybody were educated, that eliminates basically poverty and everything else.
Yeah.
So that is the root, and that's where money should be spent. And if it's spent imaginatively there, you will find that it will solve a lot of problems.
Well, I think so, because these small towns just can't possibly...
That's right, they just can't afford it.
...afford to do it, so consequently, good programs are being sold out and not being able to carry through.
Absolutely right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
623-3878 is our telephone number. We've got another call for you.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Merrill. It seems that Maine is the last frontier as far as forests are concerned. How do you feel about the preservation of our forest and waterways here?
I belong to the thing called the Wilderness Society of the United States, and I'm very concerned with it. Also the wetlands, all of them, where the tidal marshes and things, because of the ecology of the fish and the clams and so forth. There's a whole growth thing that is being interrupted by pollution, and to a great extent. And also the big corporations and people will get a hold of the land.
So the Allagash is one place that should be, you know, is organized now, and we have to do more. Stu Udall last summer, when I was talking with him, said, and there's another problem, Gary, that's coming, because they have got to the point where they have the desalinization plants in a few years will be very inexpensive, and he says developers will buy your islands and you'll have little Levitt towns on them. So I'm very concerned about things like that. Try and get islands or somebody that owns an island to will it or leave it in their will or sell it to the state so that we can preserve that.
Then you are in favor of preserving our forest.
I certainly am.
Thank you.
Yes.
Another call. Here we go. 623-3878 is the number.
Yes, hello.
Mr. Merrill?
Yeah.
Mr. Merrill, how do you feel about taxes? Will you please give us your views? I'm an admirer of yours for a long, long time. And I think you're doing a great job, and I'd appreciate very much if you'd comment on it.
Well, taxes are a thing that I haven't gone into too much. I wouldn't be surprised, but if you looked it all over, and certainly in a year or so, that there might have to be a state income tax in Maine. I don't know enough about it, but I would put on any tax where you could get the most money spread out the most equally among the people.
Yeah, Mr. Merrill, I am receiving Social Security, and I'm 71 years old, and you know, this is really a fixed income, isn't it?
That's right.
And they keep bringing up the taxes and everything else all the time. How in the name of God can people pay?
Well, that's the whole tax structure of this country has got to be reappraised. There's no doubt about it. It's in a bad state. There are 50 or 60 or 70 people in this country that have incomes over $500,000 and they pay no taxes at all.
Yeah.
The loopholes in this tax structure are very poor. And this has to be gone over and straightened out. And things like the Social Security would have to be on a rising thing if the cost of living goes up. You see, things like that, which all ties in with the tax structure.
What can we do about it?
Well, that's the kind of thing that I will try to get at if I get to Washington, you see.
Well, sir, I'm going to vote for you.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. There's one at least I have.
Yes, sir. I think you're doing a grand job. I'm an admirer of yours and have been for a number of years. And I want to thank you very much. This is quite a pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Right.
Bye.
Bye.
Another call. 623-3878 is our number. Here we go.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Merrill. I just listened to a call you had on this federal aid to education.
Yeah.
Now, you say you're for it.
Yeah.
How much?
Well, how much? I can't tell you that until I get there and look it over and so forth and so on. I'm trying to figure out, you know, to get the best so that we can get all the children getting the right education and it can be paid for between the town and the state and the government.
Now, wouldn't this mean federal telling us what we could teach in our schools, what we should have, what we should...
No, I wouldn't want that. So it would have to be done without that.
But how can you do it? This is not very wise spending, is it? If the government says, well, here's your money, spend it, period. It is not very wise to just give money out and let them spend it anyway. And yet, of course, I'm not in favor of the government telling us...
Well, you have to have a few rules. I imagine the least number of rules. There would have to be certain standard things that they couldn't go below, sort of minimums, we'll say, of standards. There would have to be standards. And then I think that should be allowed for people to use their imagination in areas.
Mm-hmm.
This is a thing that I would have to study. I'm not that cognizant of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just wonder, because I can't see how any... the government telling us what to teach, what to do, then this is more or less going toward anarchy, as near as I can see.
Well, it would depend. If there are, you know, 80 stupid superintendents or principals and only 20 bright ones, then you're going to have to make some rules to bring those 80 stupid ones up to the 20 bright ones, you see. Now, that's the kind of thing that would have to be studied and looked at very closely as to which is the best way to get the best education for the kids.
Mm-hmm. And this would be a federal board set up to...
However it would work, you see, this is the kind of thing that has to be gone over and studied all out, which I have not done that much, of course.
I see.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Gary Merrill, we've come to the end of our time. We've got another call for you. As soon as we're off the air, we'll grab this call here. I want to thank you very much for coming up in here. Incidentally, if you make it, are you going out of acting?
Well, of course you can't do both. This is ridiculous.
Well, I thought that your role might become much larger. Good luck to you, and thank you very much for coming up here this morning and providing this background information to your campaign. It's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you.
Right. We'll be back tomorrow with another program having to do with animal and pet care. At that time, Dr. James Meissner will be with us. We invite you to join us then when your friends and neighbors at the Edwards Division of Bates present another Talk Back. Norm Gallant speaking. This is your main attraction. WFAU.